This is episode 68 of the Fifth Estate podcast. Amy Otto on Harvey Weinstein and sexual harassment. It is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Neil Doing. How are you, sir?
Jay, I'm tanned, rested, and ready.
That's right. You are back from your little jaunt to Mexico.
Yes.
How'd that go?
It was lovely. For those who are interested, which I'm sure is just my mom and dad, it was our 10th anniversary. My lovely wife, Rachel, and I, we went down to Mexico, went to an all-inclusive resort instead of our usual planned out vacation where we go and see a bunch of stuff. We just decided to go to a place where when you walk outside, someone puts an alcoholic beverage in your hand and it's about 100 yards to the beach. And so we enjoyed ourselves very much, very much.
Nice, nice. So I was in New York for a few days. My son and I, we went up there, had a good time, went to a couple of Yankees games, ate good food, had, you know, New York pizza, which is the best ever, and generally had a good time. Spent a lot of money. It's New York City, so it's expensive, but had a good time, and now we're back, and you know, as we before we get going here, as we remind our audience, you wonderful listeners, we love it if you go out there and you leave us a review on iTunes. Tell us how much you enjoy us. Neil likes it. He's, you know,
I do. In fact, I went through and read some of our reviews the other day when I was feeling a little bit low, and they raised my spirits, I have to say. Only the 5-star reviews, of course, were sufficient to actually pick me up out of the doldrums. So, you know, more of those. If you care about that sort of thing.
Yeah, do that. 5 stars, Neil loves them. Okay, so big news this week out of Hollywood, Neil. Harvey Weinstein, formerly, their movie company was Miramax, and now I think it's the Weinstein Movie Company or something to that effect.
Yeah, what movies have they done?
So they did, like, from what I remember, the older ones, you know, Good Will Hunting, Pulp Fiction, you know, so a lot of those movies, you know, they were considered an independent movie kind of company, but, you know, I mean, independent in the sense that instead of costing movies they were making costing $100 million to $150 million, their budgets were more like $50 or $60 million.
I see.
You know, it's not the independent company that you would kind of think of that's making the art house picture.
Mm-hmm. So they had a number of pretty big pictures.
Oh, big time. The Weinsteins became huge, and so news broke that it's funny. It's news that broke, but it's news that apparently everybody knew about for like the longest time. Is that Harvey Weinstein engaged in sexual harassment of actresses, settled a number of sexual harassment lawsuits. Now that news is out, more and more people are coming forward. There's allegations of rape. There was a reporter who said that he, you know, masturbated in front of her. You know, just all kinds of disgusting stories that are making their way out now that the spigot has been opened. And so there's lots of talk going on about not just Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood, but sexual harassment in general, all kinds of different questions about it. And, you know, we figured we could probably find ourselves in a little hot water if it was just me, you, and another dude talking about it.
Yeah, probably. I don't think we would have, you know, as good a perspective with all dudes.
Yeah. So somebody who's been kind of opining about it on Twitter and stuff is our good friend Amy Otto, who everybody knows, you know, everybody who's a listener of the Fifth Estate knows her from Splinter Caucus, from The Federalist. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, this is your third trip to the Fifth Estate. I think you may, I don't know, Neil, has anybody been on the show three times? Maybe Noah Rothman?
Jeff.
Oh, Jeff.
Our other Splintered Caucus.
Yeah, okay. See that? So we have a special place in our heart for...
We like to get Amy back on the show.
Yeah,
You know, fairly regularly, and it's been a while. So you know, we thought let's get Amy on here because, you know, one thing about Amy, she's always got some really insightful points to make about various topics.
Yeah, it's always not the yearbook answer. So from Amy, right. So it's always a good perspective.
Yes, even when she disagrees with me, which is often.
Oh, all right, Amy. So, yeah, let's kind of, you know, as you heard me say, like, you know, this has gotten bad. More actresses are coming from us, like Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie have said that he, you know, Weinstein harassed them. There's been a couple of allegations of rape. We also found out that the New York Times could have reported on this over 10 years ago, and influence from some stars in Hollywood, allegedly Matt Damon and Russell Crowe, actually got the story spiked, and it wasn't published. So let's kind of talk about this. Let's kind of, you know, just kind of look at it from a broad perspective first. You know, one of the things that's come out that people are discussing is what took so long. Why this has been going on for not just a few years, but possibly over 20 years. Why did it take so long for something like this to come out?
You know, Jay, I think it's a really interesting question because it's clear from the accounts and the things that are coming out that this has been a clear problem and a clear offensive behavior that's a long track record and seems to be really widespread. I mean, the reason one I can think why it took so long to come out is clearly Hollywood seemed to treat this as expected. They tolerated this behavior, obviously, because it wasn't not out. Hollywood all knew this. Everyone knew this. Everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's Harvey. They would be like, oh, if you made a caricature in a movie about a producer, they'd be like, oh, stand in for Harvey Weinstein. Very funny. You know, Seth MacFarlane, I think, made jokes back in 2013 or something about, you know, these five actresses up for their Oscar now, like, they don't have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein anymore. I mean, like it's been said for years and it was just laughed off. Like the presumption was that's just part of the game. And so yeah. That's why it didn't come out. I think the other interesting thing though is to consider why did the New York Times sit on it and then decide to report it now? And that's a really interesting question in itself as well.
Yeah, I agree, Amy. And I was actually reading something in the Weekly Standard that, it's an article called The Human Stain, Why the Harvey Weinstein Story is Worse Than You Think. And the author suggests that one of the reasons that he was able to carry on this way for so long had a lot to do with the media landscape. You could still control the flow of information, you know, even as recently as 10 years ago. You know, blogs were still fairly marginal media. There was no Twitter. Facebook was not a thing. It was almost a thing at that point. And so you could set up gatekeepers. You could incentivize gatekeepers. And I think a fair bit of that was going on. You know, everybody was sort of in bed with Weinstein in terms of maybe getting their investigative reporting made into a movie, you know. So let's not talk too much about these things that we've heard. Let's not call them out. And that was something that I thought was very interesting. Just a structural kind of a system. I don't know. You're somewhat libertarian though, Amy. Isn't that like the market sort of deciding?
Yeah, I mean, but the only thing with that argument, because I read the same thing.
Sorry, that was a cheap shot. I'm
I know. I'm just letting it go. The only thing I had a problem with the Weekly Standard argument was that the New York Times sat on it, but then the New York Times was the one who reported it. So while you're making an idea about the breakdown of media structure, I'm still wondering why was the New York Times the one to yet again break the story as opposed to some other clearer sight, like, you know, gossip blogs, like all these like celebrity gossip blogs have always done it in a blinded manner. And I think maybe to what the point that resonated more with me was the amount of power Weinstein wielded over people to get them to not speak up. And I, you know, I think the interesting question is, why did they choose to speak up now? Was his power waning? Did they see, you know, he's older, maybe it's not as dangerous any longer. Maybe there's more of a framework in society to talk about this. After Ailes and Cosby and all these other, you know, really big cases of just long-term abuse have come out. I don't know. It's interesting because I believe the Weekly Standard, except for the New York Times, is still the one who broke it. And that's just the thing that stuck with me is, like, it didn't all quite fit. I mean, I think we're all still struggling to be like, exactly why now? Why did the New York Times choose to report on it now? They knew about it for, I think, a very long time.
They did. They definitely did. And, you know, I think the important thing to remember when we're talking about, you know, Weinstein, you mentioned, you know, that he wielded this power. And I think it's important to state that, you know, when someone is sexually harassing an employee or a collaborator or just somebody that they know, it's never strictly about the sex. Right. It's about power dynamics. It's about, you know, there was a report that Weinstein, you know, masturbated into a potted plant in front of somebody. Nobody does that because they like it. You do it because you can. You know what I mean? Like, that's just it's about a power thing. And I think that the power of being able to cover up what he was doing was probably almost as enjoyable as, you know, the casting couch for him. That's just my guess.
I can't disagree. You seem to have a process like nailed on how to isolate, move on, and then continue to kind of have a relationship with that person. So then they would feel even more embarrassed to disclose things the next day. I mean, he had a whole, like, it felt like a wraparound. So the women didn't speak up. At least in reading some of these accounts, that there was definitely follow-up and continual things. And I think, to your point, he also enjoyed, you know, trying to bury somebody in the media as well. So people knew that so that also was backing up kind of his veiled threats or presumption that you should kind of go along with what I'm saying here because you know how powerful I am and you know that I've destroyed people before. And, you know, so the victim in place could fill their mind with how bad this could all go really quickly. Leaving them extraordinarily vulnerable and making it more likely for, okay, he fails 9 times out of 10. For him, he still worked 1 time out of 10, right? He's just looking at it as playing the odds. So I don't know. Maybe he did, you know, I wouldn't even say maybe he doesn't or not enjoy it. I don't understand the mindset. But, you know, he just ruthlessly seemed to be playing the odds and understanding how to wield power really effectively over people.
Let's look at something. This is something that was interesting. One interesting thing that was in the Weekly Standard article, and for those who haven't read it, the audience, you're just going to have to bear with me. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs. It's very brief, but it's interesting. It's about the politics of it. One of the things that people have been allowed to I don't want to say they're allowed, but they've taken liberty with, you know, having to sit there and be so blunt about Harvey Weinstein because they could sit there and say, well, you know, Republicans can't talk too much because of Donald Trump. So, but there was one aspect of this story that's interesting. And so I'm just going to read this real quick. It says, which brings us finally to the other reason the Weinstein story came out now, because the court over which Bill Clinton once presided, a court in which Weinstein was one part jester, one part exchequer, one part executioner, no longer exists. A thought experiment. Would the Weinstein story have been published if Hillary Clinton had won the presidency? No. And not because he's a big Democratic fundraiser. It's because if the story was published during the course of a Hillary Clinton presidency, it wouldn't have really been about Harvey Weinstein. Harvey would have been seen as a proxy for the president's husband, and it would have embarrassed the president, the first female president. Bill Clinton offered to get out of jail free cards to a whole army of sleazeballs, from Jeffrey Epstein to Harvey Weinstein to the foreign donors to the Clinton. To the foreign donors to the Clinton Global Initiative. Deal was simple. Pay up, genuflect, and get on with your existence. It was like a papacy selling indulgences at the same time that everyone knew that the cardinals were up to no good. The 2016 election demolished Clinton world once and for all, to be replaced by the cult of Obama, an austere sect designated by their tailored hair shirts with Nehru collars. This is not who we are as Americans, they chant, as Harvey Weinstein's ashes are scattered in the wind.
Yeah, I think the second to that is too, is gosh, is it useful to have this echo maybe the current president? And, you know, there's some value there for them. And if what he's saying is that this would reflect badly on Hillary's presidency, is there value in the New York Times releasing it now to reflect badly on a particular president that's in president right now?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't imagine why that would be valuable.
And, you know, and that's the thing that bugs me. I'm sorry about the story. You know, people keep talking about it and they keep referencing Donald Trump and Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. But then all of a sudden, when you mention Bill Clinton's name, it's like, well, well wait a minute. That's not the same. You know, why not? Why doesn't it? You know, if all these accusers, again, you know, the whole idea, it's not just one person, you know, it wasn't just one woman who accused Bill Clinton of, you know, improper sexual advances and sexual harassment. You know, there were a number of women who did it. And so, you know, and you sit there, if you throw out the caveat, you know, that kind of behavior, people ignoring his is what allowed, you know, you wonder why Donald Trump's candidacy didn't go in the toilet the moment that tape came out, that Access Hollywood tape, you know, because, you know, it has the culture been ingrained to just kind of, you know, you say, oh, this is horrible about Harvey Weinstein, but then people sit there and say, well, this is really nothing new. You know, I mean, isn't that a point of contention to sit there and say, okay, well, if you're going to sit there and say this is nothing new, isn't that partially responsible or partially the reason why people probably looked the other way when it was Donald Trump, because they were only concerned about the things that they really cared about. And it was similar to Bill Clinton. As long as he's supporting abortion rights, who cares if he's making unwanted sexual advances toward Kathleen Willey?
Well, as I recall, though, Trump's numbers were, the polling was terrible for Trump after that video. Everybody pretty much thought he was done, but surprise, he wasn't. Anyway, go ahead, Amy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the same thing, too. I remember that hit that weekend that he was done for. I mean, even other people who are fans of his thought that was likely a death knell for his campaign. I only think if there had been an opponent that was maybe just slightly more charismatic than Hillary Clinton, he would have lost. I think that's really a reflection of how unattractive Hillary was as a candidate. And that's just a thing, because I think that normally might have been enough to deep six a candidate, especially one on the Republican side of the aisle where the bar tends to be higher for some interesting reasons. But maybe perhaps not any longer, which is something else to talk about. But the whole thing's shocking about the timing. But I think it's particularly interesting to look at how Hollywood itself created this atmosphere for such a long time, and how they've openly tolerated this for years. I don't think this is the norm in every industry, particularly. I mean, I know women have issues and there's power struggles in all industries and all these things, but I think there's something particularly unique about Hollywood and the entertainment complex that seems to make this so much worse. And to have it seem so expected because it's such a long time Hollywood trope, the casting couch, that I think that's something interesting itself that Hollywood needs to struggle with, is that they have a particular problem that I think is unique to their industry more so than others. And I'm not saying to downgrade other industries, but I think that Hollywood, particularly the way it's set up, has created this as a norm. And only now are they speaking up. And now everyone appears to be coming out and speaking up. And I think that's wonderful and all, but I kind of wish, you know, these people who are very powerful now and comfortable had said something sooner, just to save some of these many women who probably had no power and were very much at the whims of this man and had their careers in his hands. I can't help but wish that more could have been said, but I hope going forward that maybe we have an atmosphere where more can be.
Right, because, I mean, it can't end with Harvey Weinstein, that there's got to be others. Somebody on Twitter mentioned, you know, Brian Singer. Somebody said, you know, to me on Twitter that Brian Singer is the gay version of Harvey Weinstein. And there's been stories about him and some of the things that he's done. And then you've had people like, you know, it didn't get much credibility when it was Corey Feldman talking about, you know, people in Hollywood who have a, you know, an affinity for young boys. It was Elijah Wood who said, yeah, they do. They're out there. You know, he said my mother, he said he was lucky enough to be protected by his mother, who watched out very closely for him while he was working in that industry while he was younger. But he too, you know, didn't even now, you know, as somebody as famous as he is, didn't want to name names, you know, because, you know, obviously, you know, he may not have any evidence because he never suffered any of the abuse himself. He just said he heard about it, but he couldn't name anybody. And, you know, that's what you have to be concerned about. And I think,
well, it's not even just young boys. I think I saw a story about Terry Crews, who is an actor. He's very large, very muscular. And
right,
he told a story about having his genitals groped at a party in public, standing next to his wife.
Exactly.
By an executive, like, and not knowing how to react and not feeling comfortable speaking out about it. So, you know,
right. And this guy was big and muscular and said he wanted to beat him up and said, you know, the story would have been big, huge, muscular black actor beats up, you know, Hollywood player, you know. So go ahead. Right. I'm sorry.
There's something really interesting how actors and actresses to what Neil's saying. It almost made me think of Westworld, how the robots in Westworld are treated like, you know, objects where, clearly, you know, Terry Crews is an object to that man who grabbed him. The executives look at actors and actresses as like commodities and are treating them as such and their bodies as such. Like what you described to me, just like, wow, that really reminds me of like Westworld. It's super creepy.
Well, I will say this. I think everyone objectifies actors and actresses. We all
problem with the business.
Yeah, right. It's probably one of the last industries in which you are judged on your looks, and you know, the better looking you are, the more successful you are, and there's a direct correlation with that most of the time. Except for the 1970s, when apparently they went through this weird phase where all the actors were ugly.
Yeah, everybody was ugly.
Dustin Hoffman.
Even the good-looking people were ugly.
Yeah, they were all weird-looking. I don't know what the deal was in the 70s. But no, it's definitely not like that now. You know, but everybody tends to objectify actors and actresses and place them into small little boxes that they can access whenever they want to. It's just that these sexual predators do it using sexual violence and harassment and intimidation. And that's no bueno. But I think it's something that if Hollywood were to take some cues from the private business world, perhaps, it would be something that would be fairly easy to avoid. You know, maybe don't meet one-on-one with, I hate to say it, but the Pence rule. The Pence rule. If you're a male executive of a studio, leave the door open, buddy, if you're interviewing a young lady. You know, I understand sometimes you need to close the door for an audition. Have another person in there. It's not hard. Just grab somebody. I don't know. There's just, it seems like a very easy
right
thing
to
avoid.
And, I don't know about grabbing somebody.
I know. Grab somebody. Well, that's the problem, Neil.
Phrasing. My apologies.
I would push back on what Neil's saying a little bit, just for the normal work sector. I think for Hollywood, yes, an extraordinary Pence rule may be in order. You know, and I remember when the Pence story broke out and I understood both sides. I think what Mike Pence is doing is perfectly reasonable to protect his marriage. I think the pushback to some of that in industry is you will naturally in a job end up, you know, at a happy hour with coworkers. But, you know, I agree. You wouldn't want to be alone with a particular coworker. But I think what women fear when men put rules like that in a corporation is that they'll be cut off from access for where some of the work and business is done. And so maybe it's more about, should work and business be done maybe at work and the business and you know, maybe that's where you start to do work it shouldn't all be in this kind of, you know, network where it's awkward for both genders to mix. And the workplace could be thoughtful about that. But I would just say that's often the pushback when those ideas are brought up, is that women are afraid of losing access. And then promotional opportunities or idea, you know, opportunities to put their ideas up front, where other men get that, because then it's not as awkward for two men to be out together, right? So that's the thoughtfulness there about how exactly to apply the Pence rule, I guess I would say.
You know, I asked this question on Twitter. It was just an open-ended question. It was, you know, here's a relevant question. How many are there in Hollywood like Weinstein we don't know about or worse? And the funny thing is half of the answers that I got or responses to that are people, you know, saying it's not just Hollywood, boardrooms, the military, law enforcement, business, you know, stop thinking it's just, now, of course, I don't think it's limited to Hollywood. It's ridiculous. But Amy, let me ask you what you think about it. I mean, can it be more pervasive in an environment like Hollywood where, you know, unlike the business world, if you're somebody that is good at supply chain, okay, you know,
you'll never work in supply chain in this town again, Jay.
Exactly.
If you don't come over here.
That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, when you talk about, somebody had said to me, it was a response on Twitter saying, you know, you're Harvey Weinstein and you're actress one and actress two. And he basically intimates, well, you know, whichever one of you wants to come back with me to my hotel room might have a better chance of getting this role. One of them might actually do it. And, you know, that's not actually going to happen. I don't, you know, again, I'm trying to save myself the heartache of getting a lot of people yelling at me because of what I'm saying, is that I'm not denying the reality of sexual harassment in the workplace, but I am saying that the pervasiveness in Hollywood, or the,
it feels higher.
Yeah. Or more people willing to do it.
The private sector is like this, but maybe I'm being benign, but
the incentives are very different.
Yeah. I mean, I think also the power isn't as consolidated. Like, to what you're pointing, Jay, there's not just one company you can ever work at in supply chain, right? Unlike Hollywood, there was one company who could make or break an actress, right? So it's also monopoly power. That's different. I think private sector just isn't as powerful. There will always be powerful people who can use their influence to try and trash someone's career or make something uncomfortable or awkward or all of those things. I just don't think that largely they're just not as powerful in such a monopolistic manner as what Harvey Weinstein was able to wield. And maybe that's why it's different. I just think there's more flexibility there. And again, same thing. I want to do the full disclaimer. I'm not trying to like minimize that these kind of harassments can happen anywhere. But I would suggest that Hollywood has particular things about its industry and its structure that I think incentivize making it worse. And also, to pivot to what Neil highlighted earlier with Terry Crews and us talking about actors and actresses' commodities, it's also an industry with an inordinately amount of highly attractive people who are highly also insecure about their looks and about their chances. And also, you know, 10 of them all going for parts, if not thousands wanting these parts, because the risk reward is so high. So you get a lot of unusual behaviors. Like, largely it's a job between $70,000 or $80,000. Like, oh, I'm going to really put out for $10,000 more a year? Or am I going to be the most famous actress in the world and get an Oscar? I mean, it's just, the stakes are also super different, right? And I just think there's a lot more consolidated power that's so impactful and terrifying, especially for a female artist. We'll just keep it to the Weinstein bucket, where she's so powerless and knows her chances are so based on luck and the capriciousness of all these horrible gatekeepers, I think it becomes just much more likely. And that's not to say that those women are worse off or better off, or that under other industries this doesn't happen. I just think the particular nuances of how Hollywood work sets it up so it's a lot more likely to occur. Maybe that's the way I'd put it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, with the power that these guys have, it's easy for them to make a phone call to several people and say, you know, you really don't want to work with this person. They're just trouble, you know, and it can be difficult for them to get a role or something like that. Where your options in the business world, I mean, we're talking about not somebody who's already at a place, but let's just say that you're applying for a job and, you know, the guy that you're interviewing with, you know, intimates that perhaps, what the heck does that sound? Great. Alarm going off. For those of you who heard that, that's the alarm going off on my phone. Anyway, now I lost my train of thought. So what I'm saying is that if you're applying for a job, it's like somebody, you know, like you said, you know, well, we can give you this job, an additional $10,000. Well, that person can still go to company B and company C. There's a lot more successful businesses around that aren't intertwined, that look for the same skill set, as opposed to Hollywood, where you are. It's a limited area. You know, there's more options now for actors, which I think is great, especially with, you know, with all the streaming services and everything like that. But if you're one of these ones that wants to be the Hollywood player that's making $10, $15, $20 million a movie, then it's kind of like trying to make it to the pros in football or baseball or something like that. You know, how many times have you met people that say, I'm an actor? Oh, okay. Well, can you bring me another drink when you're done? You know, so, I mean, they're actors and actresses, but they're working so many of them spend 10, 15 years working multiple jobs to try and get that one break. And like what Neil was saying and what you were saying with Hollywood in terms of it being a situation where a person's looks are always very critical to the kind of role they're going to get, that makes it even more, there's more pressure at that point.
Right. None of which, I mean, absolves people, I think, of, you know, the responsibility to, you know, excise this sort of behavior from their community, and especially in Hollywood. So it's good to see that this is happening. And frankly, I'm glad that the New York Times reported it, because if this had come from random conservative blog, it would not have gotten the traction it needed. It wouldn't have the credibility. The New York Times brings a certain level of credibility. So in a way, I mean, this is the left sort of policing itself. The thing about this whole issue with the power dynamics and with people not speaking out, not speaking up, it's very difficult in these situations to do the right thing when you feel like you're alone and you're doing, and you're the only person who might, you know, possibly be speaking out against it. Nobody's going to stand next to you. You know, there are going to be consequences to what you do. And so it's very understandable that you would just be quiet. You would just look away. If you know details, you might just gloss over them in your professional dealings with somebody like Weinstein. It's a temptation, and it's something that I think, you know, we should be very careful as individuals about questioning other people's actions in these circumstances, whether it's Ben Affleck, or whether it's Gwyneth Paltrow, or whether it's, I don't know, Harvey Weinstein's personal assistant. Who knows? I mean, like, it's very difficult. And we don't know how we would react in a situation where we had to choose between criticizing somebody who we were professionally engaged with, or who we were personal friends with, when we know that they've done something wrong. I just like to come at it from that perspective. Like, we just need to be mindful that it's an incredibly difficult situation. And at the end of the day, the truth is out now, which is good. That it took so long, not so good, but it happened.
Right. And I think I just go back to what Amy was saying, that I think hopefully that there are other producers, if there are others who, and we know there are, we know it. He's not alone. He is not somebody that is doing this, you know.
Well, the Weekly Standard article highlighted another producer.
Yeah,
that didn't know who it was.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't say who it was. You know, I think the idea is that, you know, hopefully this story encourages other people to come forward if there have been other things that have been happening more recently. It's terrible. This kind of thing, you know, what's amazing is that, you know, it doesn't stop people from, you know, reporting politicians. I mean, you know, and that's funny. It's one of the reasons why supposedly the New York Times story was spiked, saying, "Hey, he's, well, so what? He's not a politician." You know, it's like when politicians are caught, I mean, you saw what happened to the representative from Pennsylvania. You know, a big pro-life representative, and then, you know, was encouraging his girlfriend to get an abortion. So, there's that. And so, you know, especially when there's a politician who is self-righteously talking about this kind of thing or that kind of thing, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, something comes out and it's like, ah, hypocrites, you know. You know, we happen to think of everybody in Hollywood as, you know, moral scum. From a conservative perspective, so when you hear about something like this, it's not surprising. But, you know, the idea is that if this happened, you know, that this happened, and if it's happening elsewhere, which we're sure it is, you know, like Amy said, it hopefully encourages other people to come forward, because these people should not be doing this. I mean, I don't care about the business, and I don't care what business it is. I don't care if it's business or Hollywood or music industry or whatever else, or politics or anything like that. You know, powerful people And I should say people, because there are men, we heard about it, who were victims of sexual harassment. I mean, that was more like a sexual assault, if you want to put it in that perspective. But, you know, this guy had to not say anything. You know, this guy who got, like you said, Neil, he had his privates grabbed at a party in front of his wife. This wasn't anything that happened in secret somewhere and that nobody knew. It was witnessed. And this guy knew that he wasn't going to, that somebody wasn't going to say anything. And so hopefully this, as powerful as Weinstein is and as powerful as as his company was, and that's the other thing that pisses me off. The company had to be the ones paying off these settlements. So for them to sit there and tell around now, oh yeah, well, you know, we're firing him. You know, that's a bunch of crap. I didn't really have a question, so if anybody just wants to.
I was like, and the question is, that's a bunch of crap. The hypocrisy of the company now being like, oh, this is news to us is really, really kind of really despicable. But I mean, that's the whole point. It's not news to anybody. Everybody knew this was going on, and yet, you know, they let it continue. That's really tragic, because that's the whole, you know, how many victims did that add to for each person who, you know, didn't stop it? And that's a tragedy on everybody's hands. Like this, some of the stories from the women, it's really impacted their lives for a very long time now, and their ability to relate to, you know, in a normal relationships with men, and just to feel stability and safe. I mean, it's truly horrifying when it steals from people. And you know, he was smart. He figured out people who had little leverage, who were weak. He would prey on them. He'd try to make them feel worse about themselves. And he would see if he could use it as leverage to kind of get his way. And so he's profoundly damaged, like more women than we'll ever read about. And it's really sad, and it's really tragic. And it's interesting to think about, like, what are the ways to help to make sure this doesn't happen again? But the industry's got to, they honestly need to police themselves better, because, you know, as we know, the government can't pass a law to ban this. There already is one. So, you know, this is on Hollywood, and maybe, you know, they could maybe take a break from telling the rest of us how to live their lives and figure out how to make their industry work better. I think that would be, you know, the rest of us in this country would appreciate them fixing this problem, as opposed to telling the rest of us how to manage our lives.
And maybe they could come up with something original instead of a reboot, too.
Yeah, they could do that as well.
Yeah. But everybody who had power seats, I don't know. The end of Jonah Goldberg's piece in the LA Times struck me. It's just an interesting thing to be like, the one group understandably has been spared the victims. He doesn't condemn their silence. But there's a real problem, like, how many stayed silent for decades happily profiting from this, you know? And what does that say? Because you're telling young women, well, either that compromise can pay off, or, you know, yeah, you're not going to be able to say much until you're me. You know, now Gwyneth Paltrow can say something.
Right.
I feel like I'm glad they're all saying something, but there's something particularly negative about the hypocrisy in them saying something now. Well, but I know this is a touchy topic, right?
It's the nature of corruption. Thing is that victims can be corrupted just as readily as willing collaborators can be corrupted. When somebody victimizes you, when somebody teaches you that the world works this way, honey, then that changes you. That kills a small part of you, a good part of you, and that's what happens to these women. They start to say, well, maybe people will think I'm only where I am because I submitted to the tender caresses of the suave, debonair Harvey Weinstein. People start to look out for number one. You know, when somebody's taking from you, you start to try to hold on to what you have, even if what you have is a result of your victimization. So that's the insidious nature of corruption. And it'll drive you nuts. It'll drive you nuts. That would be my response to Jonah's question.
It's
there.
It's a slow moving tragedy that's just so.
It is. That's why it's, you know, generally frowned upon to sexually molest women.
Largely, it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing. On balance, society has pretty much come to that conclusion.
But apparently not. If they were just turning the other, you know, nobody did anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They did nothing.
And you have, you know, it's funny now, you have who believes Meryl Streep didn't know anything?
Nobody.
You don't know.
She's full of crap.
Well, no, I give people the benefit of the doubt. You don't know what people were aware of, because, you know, were these people like spending days and days at a time with Harvey Weinstein? Probably not. Were they working in close proximity with him? Probably not, for a very limited amount of time. And I'm sure he could behave himself when he needed to. Most of these sorts of people can. So it's entirely conceivable to me that someone like Matt Damon, Russell Crowe, would in good faith ask the New York Times to squash a story about Harvey Weinstein, because they don't believe it's substantiated, because they know a Harvey Weinstein, a version of Harvey Weinstein. It happens. Yeah. And it happens in our personal lives. We see it with people that, you know, we hold in high regard, who can be real shits behind the scenes. And we don't know about it. So you stake your credibility on somebody. Again, the insidious nature of corruption.
Well, it's funny because there's a Vox article, Vox of all places, that kind of
Are we recording?
turns on this a little bit. It's funny. It's like, it is theoretically within the realm of possibility that Streep has managed to work in Hollywood for 40 years without encountering rumors of Weinstein's casting couch.
In a weird way, I would actually believe the argument, not because of Neil's kind argument, but because she's so full of herself, she probably just didn't pay attention. would get me more with the... just in her own bubble.
Yeah, and the question is, people are saying that, Meryl Streep... Nobody's suggesting Meryl Streep was a target of Harvey Weinstein. She's one of the most powerful actresses in Hollywood.
He's too old.
That too.
Let's be clear. That's terrible. He targeted young women.
Yeah. But I mean, I
like to think of Meryl Streep considering the Harvey Weinstein thing and then giving her final monologue from Doubt. I have such doubts.
Right. But the point that the writer in Vox here makes, however, Streep's assertion that Weinstein's behavior could not have been common knowledge, because if it had been, there had been reports written about it, is simply false. Multiple journalists have been trying for decades to report on Weinstein's alleged sexual harassment. So
were people sitting on them? I mean, come on, they're trying to. He's sitting on their typewriter? Come on.
These
reporters are a little cowardly. Let's be realistic.
Well, and the funny thing is,
a bunch of cowardice.
We've covered it. I mean, there was no incentive to share this story when Weinstein could control the avenues of information and wielded as much power as he did. And he's also fairly litigious. So yes, if you don't write a very good article, you could be sued. And then your employer would be like, we don't want you to work for us anymore. Goodbye. So,
if your dream was to write something, he bought all the screenplay rights to everything that was written.
There was that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. He's pretty clever.
Yeah. They usually are.
Well, yeah, they kind of knew what they were doing, but I mean, it also, I don't know. It the other thing that to keep in mind is that during that time, the internet wasn't a big deal, and so I can't remember the name of the magazine that Weinstein ran with Tina Brown.
It was like Talk.
Yeah,
Talk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, a lot of journalists would write for that magazine, on a contract basis, and apparently got paid very handsomely to do it. So they said it was a way that Weinstein wielded his power over the press, by simply, it's like, if you can write an article for this thing and get paid $1,000 to do it, then, why are you, you don't want to upset that gravy train and maybe start digging around for a sexual harassment story. I don't know. I mean, that's what I heard some people suggesting, and so.
No, what he did was buy up all the monopoly power in anything that would have controlled the message. It's just, he narrowed it so the channels were very tiny. He just closed every avenue off. He bought the lawyers. He had CDAs. He bought media. He bought influence in the media. He already lined up Hollywood. Like, there was just, he was genuinely scary. It's just, you know, as to, you know, I mean, for him to even have got like the Gwyneth Paltrow story, when you think about it, going like, she's freaking like Hollywood royalty, like Steven Spielberg's like goddaughter. And he just, he didn't care. Like, you think he would have at least not been dumb enough to touch somebody like that, that you're like, wow.
Yeah.
So it's just, the guy was sick.
Yeah. It was, it's a very, you know, sordid kind of situation. And, you know, it's funny, Neil, just to kind of confirm what you guys were talking about earlier. You know, they're, you know, another article suggests that as Weinstein has lost his touch for making Oscars, he finally became weak enough that the New York Times had the power to kind of to go forward with this and do it, that he didn't have the Midas touch anymore.
Yeah, I think so, that has a lot to do with it.
I'm probably it.
If you're not making money for people, if you're not stroking checks and that sort of thing, and like you used to, you know, people start to say, "Hey, why do I need to run interference for this guy?"
All right, so here's a question, and this is something I'm throwing out there. On, you know, somebody had said something about this, so I think it's interesting. It's gonna be a while. You know, obviously, it's only October, so the Oscars aren't going to be until next March. You know, but as this story continues to, you know, go through its gyrations, how quickly are they going to forget about this and be the self-aggrandizing, moralizing idiots that they always are at award shows at the Oscars next year? Or are they going to tone it down for once?
That doesn't matter. No, it does. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that Harvey Weinstein did wrong. Harvey Weinstein is suffering consequences for his wrongdoing.
Don't be chicken. Answer the question.
I'm not being a chicken. I am telling you that of course they will not dwell on this. This is unpleasant.
No. I am not. No. What are you kidding me? You think I'm going to care? You think they're going to get up there and start talking about Harvey Weinstein and say no?
No, they might talk about how we've made several changes in our industry and blah blah blah, accountability and respect and yada yada. The self-aggrandizement that you're talking about, this level of self-regard, of course that will be there. That's why people watch the Oscars.
And also the self-righteousness that's going to get directed outward at the evil, you know, conservative movement across the United States.
Hey, to me, it's a separate issue.
I think, you know, Jay, you're right. It's an interesting question. I think, like, it will be there, but it'll be more even obnoxious and annoying to what Neil's saying. It'll be like they've gone through corporate retraining, and the Oscars will be all about highlighting.
We searched our souls.
How they've learned, and they've searched their souls, and there'll be thematic things about the abuse of women, and all the movies for the next 5 years will have to be about women overcoming this stuff. And so they'll just make excruciatingly irritating movies. And unfortunately, yeah, they'll try and make it meaningful and poignant, which is even worse than them just ignoring it. So just as far as the watchability of the Oscars, you know, not that I don't want them as an industry to take this seriously and actually say we have a giant problem in our house and the way things work here is really not set up in the favor of people who with very little power. But you know, you're not going to see that in the Oscars, because the Oscars are complete, you know, they're the ultimate result of that system. You know, here's the five people who somehow by luck got in these parts, and now we bless them and say they're talented, even though there's a million more talented people who never even get into a movie that are probably working in theater. So, I mean, the whole thing's a farce. So, you know, I don't know how you fix that. That's a different problem.
Well, I mean, the movies that they're in are farces too. They're
actually fiction.
They're made up. They didn't really happen. I don't know if you guys know this.
That's a really interesting point, Neil.
Hey, some of this stuff is based on actual events, Neil.
I'm so about three bourbons in, so you'll forgive me. But no, I think the Oscars are a night for actors to feel important about getting up and saying lines and pretending to be other people and getting paid millions of dollars for it. They are primarily, returning to my theme of how we as society also objectify actors just in a different way. They are also primarily mannequins for the evening. You know, Dior, Tommy Hilfiger, other designers who I can't remember.
I don't think you'll see any Donna Karen.
I don't know who that is.
Well, let's just say she's a designer that basically said some of Weinstein's victims had it coming soon.
Wow. Yikes.
Yeah.
And Taylor Loft. No, I honestly, that's what the Oscars is for. It's for people to ooh and ah over how glam Hollywood is. And it is still quite glamorous. And for actors to feel important. And you know what? Good for them. Let them feel important. Put it on mute. Watch the dresses. Watch the tuxedos. I just you gotta allow people to be who they are.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying it's like, you know, it's ridiculous when, you know, it's the constant political moralizing they do when they get up there now. It's like it's become impossible to watch an award show to just kind of see people celebrated for the art that they do. That's the thing that bugs me. It's like, you did a great, that's a great movie. I don't care what you think about Donald Trump. You know, it's an award show. So I think that too much time is going to be passed. They're just going to kind of forget about it. I think there'll be probably some of that, you know, we looked inward kind of thing. And, you know, we're taking this seriously. Oh, but Donald Trump sucks.
That's nothing new. I mean, look at what's his name? Was it George C. Scott or Marlon Brando who sent a woman playing an Indian?
Indian, yeah, it was Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. I mean, they've been like this for decades, man.
You know what we need in Hollywood? You know what we need in the Oscars? We need another streaker.
No, we don't.
They do. Because yeah, I don't think anybody could rip off a good line the way David Niven did.
After Harvey Weinstein, you really want to send a naked man through this crowd?
Why not?
I just think it sends the wrong message.
That might be awkward.
Oh, boy.
Don't you remember the line, though? Do you remember the line that David Niven said when the guy ran past? He just like, he didn't miss a beat. He was like, I have to admire a guy who's willing to run across the stage like that and show off his shortcomings.
Yeah, brutal British drag.
Yes.
I wonder if actors, why they feel such a need to like expound on everything is because they know they're objectified. And so they're like, hear me. I have, you know, a brain or I don't know. I wonder why they struggle so hard to seem important besides their work. Yet they want to be recognized for how important their work is. I find them interesting to watch. Like, it's just so confusing. It's like, if you're a really good actor, some of the really good actors or actresses, though, do just stick to that and are like, I don't really want to talk about that stuff. And they just focus on their work. And those are always the ones that I think you end up admiring because they aren't trying to be like a million things to everybody. And it's like their internal neediness isn't out there. They're just like, I really love the craft and I'm not here to talk about politics.
And that's just it. I mean, that is it. You know, and that's the thing that bugs me too. It is a craft. I mean, we've gotten off a little bit of the subject here, but that's fine. I mean, it's an art. And so like, if you're an example of somebody that, you know, Amy, that you described is somebody like Gary Oldman, who has just been, you know, this guy who's played all these memorable roles over the last 25 years or whatever it may be, starting with, you know, I mean, he played Sid Vicious and Sid and Nancy and then, you know, Leon and the roles he had there. And then finally started, coming over and playing good guys like Commissioner Gordon. You know, there's been some talk about his politics, but you never see him out there just kind of like bloviating about any kind of particular issue whatsoever. It's like you said, he just goes about his business. I think that's great. You know,
it's like a baseball player being like, I have really strong opinions about like the lumber industry. Like it's not all actors are like, I really have opinions about something fully off base of where I'm an expert and I'm going to share them now. You know, I think it's a weird tick they have. I find it really strange. It's like if I was going to weigh in on like Stanislavski and method acting now for about an hour, I'm not going to do that. You know why? Because I don't know anything about it and I don't care to. And I'm not going to pretend to because I appreciate that other people care deeply about it. And I want to hear from that person.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the interesting thing I think about watching that I'm like, this is really bizarre. You know, if anybody else did this, you know, it would be seen as really odd.
You're right. All right. Well, we got to start wrapping it up here. Great show, Amy. You know, you're a delight always to have on here. We love it. But we're going to wrap it up. And, you know, as people know, we get to this point in the show, is a time where we have the one gotcha question that we hold. And so you've taken part in this.
Yeah,
you know how it goes.
Let me whip this thing out here.
Phrasing.
So, Amy, let's know about
how many
this.
Double entendres can you get through in this thing leading up to the question?
Probably two.
All right.
Probably two. So I'm very excited right now. My excitement is growing. And I want to ask you this question because, you know, we ask all our guests a gotcha question at the end. But, you know, since we're such old friends, I'm always eager to hear your perspective on these vital cultural issues, Amy. And this one. This one is definitely important. You know, I think it started off a little weird, you know, but I think it's a grower, not a shower. And I think that we're going to end up with a very, very good result. So, Amy, the question for you. Love Actually. Is it a Christmas classic or just craptastic?
Just craptastic.
Yes. You know what's interesting?
I feel bad saying that, but I just never really understood why people love that movie.
Thank you, Amy. Now you know what's interesting is we just started this a couple of weeks ago. Oh no, I can't lie because Mary Catherine Hamm liked it and she's a woman. But who else was it?
That's her fault.
I was Darn getting ready her. To say it was like all the guy guests up until now are like, oh yeah, it's a great movie.
Robert George, he liked it because of Hugh Grant and because of the British
Hugh
aspect.
Grant story is cute, but the little kid just drives me bananas.
Like, well, would
the
you like to kid. Change your vote?
No, the vote is cast.
Because overall, it's still terrible.
There, like, see?
You could splice it to 15 minutes of Hugh Grant and I'd watch it, but the rest is just unwatchable.
There. Well, we're not even gonna play any of the crappy, you know, soundtrack songs because you voted it down. I mean, it has Maroon 5 on the soundtrack. Neil, come on.
I don't care. It's a good movie. It's heartwarming. There are a couple storylines that are crap. I totally acknowledge that. Everyone has the storylines they hate. I don't like the sex body doubles. That's really not my favorite. But I mean, come on. You gotta have a heart of stone not to watch that movie and come away with at least some desire to, I don't know, interact with other human beings.
Count me among those with a heart of stone.
If you do a 15-minute version of the movie, sure, with just the Hugh Grant
just
part.
Hugh Grant.
The rest, no. The little kid and the story. No, I just, it's, you know, I always hate the precocious child storyline in Hollywood. Though. That's just
I know, it's like inundated with those kinds of things. See? Yeah, we should replace the movie choice, Neil, with like Black Hawk Down or something like that. I don't know.
I love that movie.
No. We're gonna go through the end of the year up through Christmas, man.
I know.
Love Actually.
Did I surprise you guys?
Well, no, you know, I had a feeling you would.
Yeah, Amy's a little bit more cynical than some. So it's like. You know, I had a feeling that she wasn't going to like it. I was hoping. It was good. So that was great.
Well,
Neil,
you were
due for a loss. I mean, you had, you know, in this question, you know, 3 weeks in a row or something with a win. So it was like.
Yeah, well, what does that tell you? That maybe it's a good movie with widespread appeal.
Ugh. You started this damn thing too late, too early, man. We got to be asking this question over the next, like, 8 weeks now.
What we need is a sufficient amount of data. We talked about Seinfeld for like 3 months, so I think that we can handle
this.
What
was funny about the Seinfeld thing is it actually turned out closer than we had thought. And the guy who tallied it up for us, we're like horrible. We still never sent that guy something.
You're horrible, Jay.
No, you are. It was your idea.
Well, I guess I should never have committed, but the ball's in your court, man.
Why is it in my court?
Because you need to, we'll talk about this off air.
now, Now that he's probably listening, he's like, yeah, asshole, what are you going to send me?
Look, this is why you take notes when we have discussions, Jay. Comey style.
Are you taking notes right now?
I'm taking notes right now.
Okay.
Comey style.
It is. I'm a big believer in James Comey's technique. Memo for every conversation.
Copious notes.
And it's not classified. None of it is classified.
Anyway, Love Actually is a good movie.
No, it's not. But anyway, for this week, it's not. Anyway, all right, Amy, thanks again so much for being on. We'll definitely have you back again at some point because you're fun. I mean, this normally we've been cutting the podcast down, you know, just kind of keep it a little shorter, and we've been kind of going over for an hour here. But that's because it's so much fun to talk to you. So it's
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you again. And you can find Amy on Twitter at AmyOtto8. And, have you had anything recently at the Federalist, or is it,
I have not of recent, and that is because it's been summer, but yes, it's October. So yes, I will be on that.
All right. But you can still go
you can read anything written is there.
Yeah. Go to the Federalist, go look at the contributors, find Amy's profile, and then you can kind of look at some of her stuff. Some of it, you know, it's great because she's been doing it for years. So it's interesting how stuff that she may have written two or three years ago is kind of relevant today. So it's pretty good to check that out from a cultural perspective anyway. So, which is, you know, her strong points. That's why we had her on to talk about this. So we knew it would be,
I'm ahead of the curve, people.
Interesting.
All
right. Yeah. All right. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Fifth State. I'm Jay Caruso for Neil Dewing. We will see you next time here on the Fifth State when we'll be bad mouthing Love Actually once again.